Chapter 24. Erin sat in her inn, covering her face, but when she took her hands away, the flowers were still there. Flowers instead of gold. It was, well, the thing was, she should have seen it coming. Erin realized that in the obvious clarity of hindsight. Why would a bunch of tiny fairies be carrying around a pile of gold? And even if they did have gold, why would they give it to her when they could trick her? Because that was what fairies did. Erin had read the stories. True, she was more of a Peter Pan fan than Brothers Grimm, but she vaguely recalled something about fairy gold now that she thought of it. I need to remember everything. Everything she'd ever read about monsters and myths, from Harry Potter to that one book from the Spiderwick Chronicles she'd read while teaching chess to kids. Erin wished her memory were perfect, but perfect recall was apparently only perfect when it came to artsy things. Song lyrics, lines from Romeo and Juliet, even movie quotes popped into Erin's mind with ease if she concentrated. But books? Apparently they didn't count. But none of that should have mattered, because Erin should have known better. It was just, she'd had that dream, which had been almost true, and she'd been caught up in the past. She'd done something magical, so it was fine that she'd gotten caught up in the moment, right? Right? Erin looked at the pile of golden flowers. No. This was unacceptable. This was horrible. This was a pile of her own coin and a day of frantic effort down the drain. All she'd gotten were 4 levels, which was great, but it wasn't money, and Erin didn't even know what those 2 skills she'd gotten did. What were they again? Erin frowned and massaged her head. She was still waking up. It was Inn's aura and, it was wondrous fair, right? Magical cooking? No, that wasn't right. Clearly it was the other one. But what did it mean? Wondrous fair? Like food or bus fare? Erin imagined getting into a bus and giving the bus driver a handful of the magical gold coins the fairies had tricked her into accepting. Yeah. That would be nice. Faint clicking of bone on floorboard made her turn around. Torin had entered the inn, looking around warily. He was probably wondering if she was hurt. Erin sighed.
It's fine, Torin. I just realized I got scammed, that's all.
Torin looked at the pile of flowers and back at Erin. She picked up one and sniffed at it and then sneezed.
Oh, great. They even smell funny.
They smelled like some kind of spice rather than a floral scent. Erin scowled at the flower.
I thought they were starting to like me, but this is what I get?
She trailed off. Torin looked at Erin quizzically, but the girl was thinking.
Oh, right. Turn bad things into good things. And they gave me something, even if it wasn't what I thought. Fairy gifts. Okay. Okay.
Erin frowned at the flower. She sniffed at it again. It didn't smell bad, and the fairies had given it to her. Maybe it was a trick. No, it was a trick. But were they completely useless, or...
Maybe they're edible.
It was a long shot, but Erin gingerly tasted the flower. She was fairly certain that while jerks the fairies might be, they wouldn't give her poison. To Erin's surprise, the flower was wet. No, it had a bit of nectar gathered where the petals met. It was tasteless, but it fizzed on Erin's tongue. Immediately, she spat onto her palm and looked for somewhere to put the flower as she scrubbed at her mouth. Torin approached, holding his hand out. Gratefully, Aaron turned to give the flower to him, and began to shrink.
What? Oh no! No, 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 no! What's happening?
Torin stared down at her as Aaron began shrinking towards the floor. The chairs, the tables, everything got taller around her. Aaron stared around, too panicked to move. The room grew around her until suddenly she was staring up at a ceiling as high as the clouds in the sky. Torin was a giant, tall as a skyscraper, and the nearest chair leg was like the trunk of a massive tree. Aaron stared around in horror.
Oh, no! It's the drink from Alice in Wonderland!
It was magic. The flowers. That was wonderful and totally horrible at the same time. Aaron began to panic.
I don't have the other one to make me big. What do I do?
Maybe another flower would help. But suddenly, the table was a thousand of Aaron's feet up. She stared around at her skeleton, the table, and herself. Aaron panicked harder. Torin hadn't been having a good day. He hadn't been having a bad day either, but today had been decidedly subpar. Saria had brought him out of the inn when the curious blobs of blue light had appeared, and when he'd tried to warn Aaron about the flowers, he'd been silenced and sent away. The half-elf had gone to the city, but Torin wasn't allowed there either, so she'd told him to wait outside till morning. Fortunately, Torin had not been ordered to follow Saria's instructions, just to follow her. And since he couldn't follow her any further or return to the inn, he'd walked back until it was in sight and then waited until morning. That had been unpleasant. It wasn't that Torin got bored, but he didn't like doing nothing. He hated it. It was a feeling in his chest, in the very core of his being. Torin felt something, and that was resentment. He had been created to serve. That was his purpose, wasn't it? Or was it something else? To grow? To become stronger? Torin had already realized he was more than his common brethren. They could not restore themselves, and they had no levels. He was unique, and he was Aaron's best helper. She trusted him. She had sent him away, even when he'd tried to help. Stopped him from doing his job. Torin wasn't sure how he felt about that. The skeleton had wanted nothing in the first days. Those had been good days, when there was only her words and him carrying out her words. The tasks had been hard, so hard. But he had thought and worked, and sometimes she had said, "Good job, Torin." But now he was thinking more, and the thinking was making Torin feel complicated. It made his head ache. Only he had no head that could ache, or even a brain, so the feelings just built up inside of him until Torin wished he could smash his skull apart. And now Aaron was doing something Torin couldn't understand again. The skeleton stared at his mistress as she toppled off her chair and began flailing around on the ground wildly. She shouted up at him,
"Help me!"
Obediently, the skeleton reached down for her, but Aaron screamed and flinched away.
"Ah! Don't! You'll squash me with your fingers!"
Again. Her words didn't make sense. They weren't right. Torin hesitated, but he couldn't disobey her. And yet, in his being, for the first time, Torin questioned Aaron's words. They were orders, and they were the core of his being. But they weren't good orders, and it bothered the skeleton. Aaron was still thrashing around on the ground, kicking her legs and staring at a chair leg as she shouted and screamed. She turned and looked at Torin desperately.
"Go, get help! Get someone! Saria or Pisces! I need someone with magic!"
That was at least doable. Torin started for the door.
Hurry!
There had to be something he was missing. Torin glanced back at Erin as he shut the door, but she looked completely normal, if panicked, as she squirmed around on the ground like an insect. Maybe it had to do with the flowers? It was a fault of his that he couldn't understand. That must be it. Torin needed more levels. Yesterday had already proved his weakness. The drake named Relk had threatened his mistress, and she hadn't called on him. She'd motioned for him to stand down because she didn't think he could defeat Relk. And Torin didn't think so either. If the drake had attacked, he would have failed. Unacceptable. Torin was so lost in thought, he nearly walked past the half-elf as she ascended the hill, staring at the inn from which Aaron's muffled voice was still audible. Saria paused as Torin stopped in front of her and pointed at the inn.
What's all the shouting about? Is Aaron okay?
Torin shrugged and pointed to the inn. Saria hesitated, but then she hurried towards the door. Torin watched her go. She knew magic, and she was Saria. Well, that was that. Job done. Torin kept walking outside. Normally, he would have immediately gone back to Erin to obey her next instructions. But now, he didn't feel like it. Bad orders. Weak Torin. Unacceptable. He'd had good orders before. Gathering the mushrooms yesterday had been fine, and he'd killed the shield spider in a good fight, crushing the thing again and battering it with a rock. And Erin had even been proud of him for bringing the venom. But the rest had not been good. And Torin had been too weak to destroy the enchanted armor. He'd battered at it for over an hour, dodging attacks, reforming himself until he was dangerously low on mana. But he hadn't done a thing. Yet the goblin had slain the armor. Her tribe had destroyed the enchanted being with flying pieces of clay and the exploding bark. She had something Torin didn't. She would be more worthy of serving Erin and carrying out her stupid orders. Torin paused. Stupid? They weren't stupid orders. They were just... He had to level up. He fought more. He became more with each level. But he had to protect Erin. And yet, protecting Erin could only happen if he was strong enough. And Torin wasn't strong enough. Therefore, he should level up to protect Erin. That made sense. Torin thought hard. Erin would probably be screaming and talking with Saria for a while. She wouldn't need him for an hour, perhaps. And so, what could Torin do in that span of time? The skeleton looked towards the north. The dungeon entrance and the goblin's lair were too far away, even if he ran. But there were several shield spider nests that way, and hungry bears, and those snow creatures. Torin began to walk away from the inn. Level, grow, and then come back, so he could listen to more orders from Erin. He hoped they wouldn't be stupid ones. Justice in Liscor was harsh and swift. Celis had always known it, and even taken comfort from that fact as a child. No one was above the law, and their watch was stronger than other cities, except for maybe the walled cities. Certainly better than human cities. Criminals could expect a quick end, or at least a hefty fine they'd pay for any misdeeds, but the same knowledge wasn't quite as self-evident as an adult. Celis knew the Watch was strong enough to fight off bandits and monsters, and even a small army, but Liscor still stood between the south and north, a gateway between species. They couldn't act without repercussions from either side, and that meant the same justice she'd admired as a child was sometimes more of a compromise. Perhaps the best example of that was being played out here. Celis stood in a crowd of mainly drakes standing at the city gates. She was dressed in warm clothing because it was a cold day and starting to snow again. Even so, it was cold for the drake, but it had to be even colder for the human girl. Celis stared at a blonde-haired girl with very pale skin. She might be beautiful, or she might be ugly. Celis really had no clue. She wasn't good with human features anyways. Even so, the drake thought the girl was probably some kind of nobility. She was wearing what had once been expensive clothes, and Celis had heard of the many magical artifacts the watch had taken off her. Now, though, the girl's hair was tangled and dirty, and her skin was red from the cold and equally unclean. The tears and wretched expression on the girl's face didn't help either. No one seemed bothered by the girl's distress, though. T'Kern's own face was blank and impassive as he herded the girl out the gates. Celis knew that was a bad sign. Gnolls didn't get angry the same way drakes did. When they got silent, that meant they were really angry.
A silent gnoll is death's spell toll.
Celis murmured the words and got a few glances from the people around her. But it was true. The other gnolls that had gathered to watch the human thief be exiled from the city all had that blank, expressionless look on their faces. They were furious, Celis knew. They'd wanted to tear apart the girl, but the watch had intervened before the mob could do so. Now that the human was being exiled, the gnolls were even angrier than before. It was all politics. The watch hadn't been able to get out where the thief was from, and they didn't really care, not with all the gnolls in the city outraged over the complete destruction of Kershaya Silverfang's shop. And yet, killing an important human was also out of the question. No one in L'Skor wanted a war if it turned out the girl was from one of the five families or some lord's daughter. So, why not just exile her? It meant they could deny involvement if she died, and it got her out of the city. The only problem was that the gnolls wanted her dead, not just gone. And so compromises had been made. The girl had no winter clothing, only the rags she had on, and she only had enough food for a day. It was cruel, but it was L'Skorian justice. Far worse would have been a group of gnolls rioting in the streets. If the watch had to intervene, there would have been even more bloodshed by the time it was over. After all, the watch was mostly drakes. If it became an issue of drakes versus gnolls, it would be the same terrible conflict that played out across the southern part of the continent. So, the human was exiled instead, with little chance of survival, and quickly, too. No one in the crowd of watching drakes and gnolls had any sympathy for the thief, and the other humans in the city had wisely stayed away from the gathering. Only Celis had a twinge in her chest as T'Kern forced the crying girl out into the snow. She felt bad, mostly for Kershaya. But Celis couldn't watch the sniveling, whimpering girl herded out the city gates without a twinge of guilt. Maybe it was because she'd known Aaron for so long. If it had been Aaron sent to freeze or be eaten by monsters. But Aaron would never have done something so horrible. Celis glanced across the crowd at an open space. Kershaya sat alone, among her own kind, yes, but alone in her own small area of space. She watched the girl quietly, and Celis's heart did hurt then. Kershaya had lost her stall, lost her goods. She had coin in her home still, but it was a crippling blow to the shopkeeper. And the watch hadn't repaid her. They didn't have the coin. The city wouldn't cover the costs, and the girl's artifacts were almost all junk, devoid of their magic. The gnoll didn't deserve this. The thief deserved punishment, but... Celis's eyes went back to the girl as she stopped, staring out at the snow-covered plains. The girl turned to T'Kern, clearly arguing, but the gnoll just pushed her forwards. The girl fell into the snow and wailed a thin, piteous sound. This wasn't right. Celis knew the girl would be dead in less than an hour, even if she stuck to the main road and didn't walk into a shield spider nest. But who would help her? Celis was a citizen of Liscor, and she couldn't assist a criminal. And whoever the girl's folks were, even if Celis had a way to get Hawk to deliver the letter, they would never arrive in time. She knew one person who would help. One person who would help the girl, regardless of how many people disapproved. But Celis had no way of talking to Aaron. Not right now. It was more politics. Everyone knew Celis was Aaron's friend, and so everyone, or at least a lot of them, were watching her. It was why Celis had come here to watch the girl be sent away. She had to support her kind. If people thought she favored humans over drakes and gnolls... Some of the people in the crowd felt as Celis did, the drake knew, but they were the minority. People liked Kershaya's shop, and the thefts had hit the city even as they were rebuilding and mourning their dead. Most of the drakes had bored expressions, or ones of contempt for the girl. Worse still were the ones who looked like they were enjoying the girl's misery. Celis noticed Lissom in the crowd, grinning and laughing with some of his friends. The old Dullscale even had a small bag of nuts he was snacking on. He was disgusting. Celis tried not to glare as her tail thrashed on the ground with anger. This sight wasn't fun. It was sad. It was wrong. It was...
Quite amusing. I wonder, will that guardsman kick her into the snow?
Celis looked over. Pisces stood in the middle of the crowd of drakes, eating food and watching with apparent amusement. Now there was a human who no one would ever accuse of being speciesist. He was eating one of the hamburgers that had become the latest fad in Liscor. This one was a triple patty sandwich smeared with rich mustard. It was meant for gnolls, but the mage devoured it greedily, ignoring the juice that ran onto his robes. Celis wanted to ignore him, or at the very least, not look at him. But Pisces had seen her. He unapologetically pushed his way through the crowd until he was standing next to her.
Miss Celis, I'm pleased to see you here.
I'm not.
Celis glared at Pisces. The necromancer returned her look blandly as he licked his fingers noisily.
Why are you here? This isn't your affair.
No. Well, I might not be a citizen, it is true, but I was in need of entertainment.
And you think this is entertaining?
Vastly. The incompetence of your watch only matches the amusement of watching fools reap their just dues.
Pisces nodded at the girl and chuckled. Even the other drakes around him gave him looks of disgust and moved away, leaving Celis and Pisces together in an opening in the crowd.
Incompetent? The watch might not have found her, but she had magical artifacts that hit her.
Oh, I'm sure. What I was referring to was not that, but the speed with which they have expedited her sham of a trial and condemned her to death.
Pisces nodded at the captain of the watch, Zavara, as she stood with Kilbikich, Relk, and the other senior guardsmen. The drake was watching with a scowl as Tikern moved the girl further from the gates.
Drakes and gnolls do not care about humans. Your people have, in arrogance and panic, forgotten to ask the most pressing questions.
Such as?
Oh, the most basic of questions. Why is this girl here? Who are her people? She's clearly the runaway of some noble house or lineage. Why not keep her for ransom, or at least contact other cities by mage spell?
That was what Celis had been thinking, but she would never have admitted it to the condescending mage.
We want her out of this city, the gnolls want her dead, and this is the best compromise. Besides, Liscor doesn't deal with humans.
How memory fades. I recall just a few decades ago this place was a hub of trade between cultures. But ever since that unpleasantness during the necromancer's attack... Ah, well, at least everyone is happy. Except for you, I note.
Pisces peered at Celis, and she leaned away from him, frowning. But he was right, and in lieu of anyone else to talk to, Celis reluctantly confessed her opinion. She lowered her voice, although she and Pisces had plenty of space.
I'm all for punishment, but this...
Celis waved at the girl who was trying to fight her way past to Kern into the city. She was desperate, but the gnoll was unmoving. He kept shoving her back into the snow.
This is murder.
It isn't murder if it's a human. I believe one of your friendly fellow citizens told me that.
Celis had a pretty good idea of who. Lissom had not been quiet after the attacks, and worse, no one was telling him to shut up. She sniffed and twitched her tail in irritation.
Not everyone hates humans, and she's just a child.
Celis squinted at the girl as she gave up and just knelt in the snow, sobbing.
Isn't she?
She's quite young. That's good. If she dies, it will be less trouble to reanimate her.
Celis turned her head to gape at Pisces in horror. But that was right. He was a necromancer. The mage looked offended and spread his arms wide.
What? I'm on your side here. The girl gets punished, everyone's happy, and I get a free body.
The drake edged away from him.
You're a monster.
I practice my craft without harm. I don't disturb your graves.
Because you'd be killed in a second if you did. I'm surprised the watch let you into the city. You have a criminal record. You were a thief. You went to villages and scared folks into giving you food and coin.
I repaid my debts.
Only because Ralk made you.
I paid 3 times what I took. In the eyes of the law, my debt is settled.
That was sadly true. As an apolitical city of commerce, Liscor's laws meant that someone who had committed a lesser crime could pay off their fine and wipe their slate clean. It didn't apply for murders and so on, obviously, and the fines were harsh, but it was a testament to that law that even a necromancer with a personality like Pisces could walk through the gates.
It appears our little show is at an end either way.
Pisces pointed, and Celis saw the girl had given up. She was slowly trying to make her way north through the snow. She kept stumbling and falling onto the frozen ice, though, and she was still crying.
She's going to die.
Yes, quite soon, I believe. Incidentally, I wanted to ask you about entering the Adventurers' Guild in the city. Do you have a moment?
Pisces turned from the struggling girl to look at Celis. The crowd was beginning to disperse, but the gnolls and many drakes were still watching the girl slowly disappear into the distance.
What? You? Entering the guild? You have to be joking!
Celis stared at Pisces incredulously, but he only smiled enigmatically.
I have my reasons. Being short of coin, for one thing, but combat and the opportunity to acquire fresh corpses is another.
Well, good luck, but I'm off duty. Go bother the receptionist at the desk, and good luck, because we don't have to admit you.
I know. That is why I've come to you.
Celis laughed.
If you think I'll help you because you know Aaron...
She broke off and hesitated. Her head turned and she stared at the human girl. She'd fallen in the snow again, and this time she hadn't gotten up.
Aaron.
Yes, I know Erin, and I provide important services to her, such as the skeleton who assists her in her work. I am an asset, a valuable one you will make full use of if you know...
Celis raised one clawed finger. She stared hard at Pisces. Now that she looked at him, the mage appeared different to her. He was still the same arrogant jerk he'd always been. He still looked like he was sneering at everyone and everything, but he looked different. Saria had helped him buy new robes, but they weren't good ones. They were thick wool and already slightly stained. They hung loosely on his frame, and Celis thought Pisces had lost weight. He had always been thin, but now his cheekbones stood out more. And come to think of it, every time Celis had been at the inn recently, Pisces had been there. Erin usually only gave him one meal a day, even if it was a big one. Celis looked back at the girl and made up her mind. She nodded to the girl who'd managed to get to her feet and lowered her voice even further.
Help her, and I'll figure something out.
Pisces frowned at the girl, but didn't react in any other way. His voice was equally quiet, and he put an annoyed look on his face and brushed at his hair as if offended.
Oh, help her. Why should I? And how, pray tell?
Tell Erin. She can help. If she decides to, I mean.
She most eminently will. Very well. Curious. I suppose I could deliver a message. And if I will, you will approve my request.
Consider yourself a bronze rank adventurer. But you can't go now. Everyone's watching, and they'll know I spoke to you.
Pisces smirked at Celis.
Please, I am a mage, am I not? I would go back into the city, hounding you about my request, and then cast the spell as soon as you slam the door to the Adventurer's Guild in my face.
Celis blinked at Pisces.
You've got that planned out?
Any neophyte from Wistrom is well versed in the subtleties of politics and subterfuge. If you would raise your voice and call me several names, I could suggest a few.
Celis nodded. She was no actor, but insulting Pisces was easy. She looked back one last time at the girl, now a speck in the distance cresting a hill. She was a thief, but she was not evil, and maybe she didn't deserve to die. Celis had given her a chance, a slight one, but a chance. She hoped that she wouldn't regret her choice, or Erin hers. It was done. Kershaya watched as the thief left the city and felt... not a thing. The other gnolls around her muttered as the girl finally disappeared from the hilltop, but none went to follow her. The Watch's presence here was as much to exile the girl as to make sure she died from the winter's cold rather than at a gnoll's hand. It was a sensible decision, and Kershaya applauded them for it. She bore Zavara no ill will, although the Drake clearly did not feel the same way. The Watch captain kept staring at Kershaya, possibly looking for signs of anger, but Kershaya felt none. She was hollow, and the girl thief's fate mattered little to Kershaya in any case. She knew the rest of the gnolls in the city did not feel the same way. T'Kern had offered to cut her down even though it would mean his job, but Kershaya had forbidden any action. The thief was punished, and her few magical items taken away. She would die in the frozen wilderness, or she might live if she met a caravan or traveler on the road. But so what? The damage was already done. Slowly, the gnoll looked down at the small thing in her hands. All else was ash, and this was the only hint of what had been. Her heart felt like that ash. It was blackened by grief and beat too faintly in her chest. She had lost everything. The gnolls in the city from her tribe had lost everything. It was all gone. One of those gnolls, a tall butcher named Drashi, growled low as the thief finally disappeared from sight. He had been one of those who wanted to kill the girl and then chop her into bits and eat her. He was still furious, both at the human child and at the city itself.
And this is what passes for justice here? She has taken much, yes, much from all of us, but you especially. And the city merely exiles her and does not repay you. If you had been a drake...
Kershaya sighed. Best to cut him off. Drashi was a good person, but his words were too loud, and she knew many of the young ones in the crowd around her shared his opinion.
It matters not. What we have lost would not have been replaced in any case. The girl will die either way. Even so!
Kershaya did not want another debate, especially where there were ears which might listen. She cut Drashi off again, an offense, but acceptable given her loss.
The bonds we have built here are more important than vengeance, yes? The goodwill we have won is all we have left. Goodwill will not sway hearts or minds among the others, Kershaya.
That was true, and Kershaya felt the weight of it pressing down on her. She sighed.
Yes. We will have to discuss this, but for now, let us go, yes?
The gnolls hesitated, but Kershaya had rank, or more accurately, worth. Worth was what governed gnolls. Seniority or power were lesser concerns for them, and until yesterday, Kershaya had been the most worthy of them by far. Worth. She still had some of it. Still had the debts of old to call upon and the goodwill fostered within this city. But old worth grew stale quickly, like meat. Now that Kershaya had lost her shop, what worth could she have? She could rebuild. Kershaya had the coin, but she didn't have the time. Even if her shop got up and running again, all that she had worked for was already lost. Drashi knew it as well. The gnoll spoke to Kershaya as the gnolls loped back through the city streets in a pack.
We must hurry. The tribes already begin to move. If we have nothing to bring to the gathering, our voices will be lost.
Another truth. But Kershaya saw no good answer to the problem before them. They had had something worthy of bringing, something that would have made their clan great. All the clans brought things to share for all gnoll kind, and thus grew in worth and made their voices louder. But the Silverfang tribe's hopes had burned with Kershaya's stall.
We have nothing.
We can try again. We have the coin. Not for this. Not for more than one or two trifles.
No, it is Aaron we must rely on, I think.
Drashi fell silent. That was not a comforting thought, but it was all Kershaya could think to give. Aaron Solstice. Upon her shoulders, all of Kershaya's hopes now lay. At first, helping Aaron had been such a small thing, an act of charity and aid to a human who was worthy of both. But now she was all Kershaya had left. All else was ash. Kershaya stared down at the thing in her paws. A fragment. That was all she'd salvaged. She crumpled the fragment of the spellbook and let it fall to the ground. Who would have known? And even if there had been a fire, non-magical flames would not have damaged the rare collection of books hidden in the back of her stall. 23 books. The sum of the efforts of the Silverfang tribe over these long years. All gone in an instant. Kershaya still remembered the fireball. Still remembered throwing herself out of the way just in time. Would that she had leapt towards the burning orb, intercepted the blast. But how could she have known the spell was that powerful? It had been so secret, the books. They were safe there, with a gnoll to quietly watch the market each night. safer than Kershaya's home, which had been broken into twice by petty thieves. A small mistake, but one that had cost everything. Kershaya closed her eyes. She was still most worthy, and thus on her back fell all the responsibility for the gnolls she had led to this city. It was heavy, and she was tired.
I must talk to Aaron. Perhaps tomorrow. For now, I will go and rest.
The other gnolls were instantly solicitous. They offered to walk Kershaya back, but she refused. She moved through the streets slowly, nodding as Drakes offered her condolences, slowly ascending the steps to her small home. Inside, Kershaya slowly sank into one of the sturdy chairs she had bought with the first coin she had earned in this city years ago. It felt like another life, and she had worked so hard, succeeding against all odds. This gathering would have been the one to make her tribe famous. It would have improved all gnolls, given them the power to cast magic spells. Their young would have prospered. But now, what would she tell her sister, the chieftain? How would she face the others after her bold words and all that they had given her to undertake this grand quest? Gnolls did not weep. At least they didn't weep pointlessly. Kershaya had shed all of her tears already. Now she only had sadness pooling in her breast. Sadness and only the faintest breath of hope. She needed Aaron. The girl had to have something from her world Kershaya could use. Something worthy. Something that could make the gnolls... The gnoll leaned back in her chair and closed her eyes. The trouble was, she knew Aaron. The girl was good-hearted, brave, and kind, but that she had something in her head worth a fortune? Kershaya tried to imagine another world of metal cars and the things Aaron spoke of, but how different could it be if the girl was just like other humans? Did she know of a different kind of sword? A new forging process, perhaps? Somehow, Kershaya just couldn't imagine that.
I see. And the girl will die soon?
To the best of my knowledge, yes, my queen. She has no allies within the city, and the outside temperatures will freeze her without adequate protection.
Kissimver stood in front of his queen and racked his brains, trying to find something, anything, to add to his report. It was just simply an answer to the question put to him, but he knew it wasn't right. His queen, the queen of the free Antinium within Lascaur, sat before him, a massive creature hidden in the darkness of the massive cavern underneath Lascaur. She was his queen, his ruler and sole reason for living, and he knew he wasn't good enough to serve her. Kissimver was the prognigator of the Antinium, but he was new. He was inexperienced, and worse, attempting to fill a position that had once been occupied by Kilbekich. The older, newly instated Revelantor was famous among the Antinium, if that word could be applied to any one being in the hives. Above him, Kissimver's queen sighed and shifted ponderously. He had no idea if that was a good thing or a bad one. His queen was too large to move, but did her movement signify impatience or simply a desire to stretch her limbs?
I see. And the gnolls, will they attack?
I believe not, my queen. They will be satisfied with the human's death, and Kershaya Silverfang has ordered no reprisals to be made.
Another simple answer, but Kissimber was sure Kilbekich could have answered better, with more details, perhaps, or some insight, but it would not do to bother his queen or offer unsolicited opinions. Again, the queen shifted. One large feeler waved towards the surface.
This thief has cost them much.
Yes, They have lost the magic or tomes stored in Kershaya Silverfang's shop, although I believe her reserves of coin are still hidden in her home.
Even so, a grievous loss. Perhaps unwelcome.
Unwelcome? Kissimver had no idea the gnolls in the city were of interest to his queen. But then she played a far deeper game than he could imagine. If only Kilbkich could advise him. But Kissimver was in disgrace with both his queen and the other Antinium. At last, his queen shook her massive head.
It may be this loss matters, or not. Local gnoll politics do not interest me. We will hear when these tribes gather to discuss later. Two more important matters. The workers.
Kissimver tried to stand up straighter. He was already standing at attention, but he knew this was the most important reason why he had been summoned.
Yes, my queen. We have begun testing the workers as was suggested by the individual known as Pawn. He and Bird.
Kissimver stumbled slightly over the names. They weren't Antinium names, and what was worse, they had been chosen by the workers themselves. It was as if they considered themselves to be the equals of the queens. And yet, these individuals were desired by his queen, for reasons Kissimver did not understand.
They brought the workers who had visited the inn together and attempted to recreate the conditions for reaching individuality.
By playing chess?
Yes, by playing chess. But questions were asked of the workers as they played.
Which ones?
I do not know, m'lady. Kilbkich and I were positioned outside the room until called for.
It had been a point Kissimver had argued hotly against, but he had been overruled by Kilbkich. His queen paused, but did not ask him why.
Then the results?
She already knew, so why ask? But Kissimver obediently reported.
Of the 25 workers, 4 became individual, choosing names and asserting their independence and loyalty to the hive. The others all became aberration.
Kissimver still remembered slicing workers apart. It didn't bother him, but even here Kilbkich had surpassed him. The other Antinium had danced a deadly trail of death through the rampant former workers, while Kissimver had stuck to the established protocols.
1 in 8? That is very acceptable. Why was that process not continued with the others?
I believe it was due to the effect of meeting the human known as Erin Solstice, my queen. After the 4 individuals were separated and the other aberrations destroyed, Kilbkich made the assessment that this process was a success. He gathered more workers and some soldiers and attempted to repeat the process.
And?
The rate of those who did not encounter Erin Solstice was 1 in 163. No soldiers became individual, but few became aberration either.
They had been especially hard to put down. Kissimver still had a cracked bit of exoskeleton on one leg and his side where he had been struck. The sound that came from his queen was a deep sigh, but one tinged by an emotion Kissimver could not identify. He waited, tense, alert for the next question.
So, it seems Kilbkchzheim was correct. Erin Solstice is needed, for now, at least. But of the five individuals you have observed, their loyalty?
Of the five, the first, Pon, is the most independent. He also assumes a position of command among them, but remains receptive to orders from Kilkch. The others do likewise, and none have acted in any unusual manner.
Aside from the fact that they were taking on responsibilities and roles no other Antinium had ever taken on before, Kissimber did not mention the way in which Pon spoke to him, or the painful games of chess they had played.
Good. Continue.
Kissimber bowed his head. It took him a second to realize he'd been dismissed. The Queen of the Antinium watched and felt Kissimber go, and sighed when she was sure he was gone from earshot.
Inconvenient.
That was the only word for it. Kissimber was simply not Kilbkch, and that was as regrettable as it was inevitable. Perhaps the new Prognigator would rise to the station, or perhaps he would not. In the meantime, it was simply another annoyance on top of the Queen's plate of annoyances. But the individuals could be replicated. They could be made anew, even if the cost was prohibitively high at the moment. And even that could be surpassed if necessary. Erin Solstice was important, but not vital. That was good. It meant that the Antinium could continue the experiment. It meant that they were not reliant on uncontrollable variables like humans or other species. It meant the time of change was upon them again. Such a thought sparked excitement, even in the languid queen's body. Again. Soon, perhaps, the Antinium might change again, and then the other queens would know she had been right. It might seem odd for rivalry and argument to form among the Antinium, but it had been discovered long ago that without such, the Antinium would stagnate. The queen had endured the ridicule and scorn of her fellow queens for long years, but now she would be proven right. The great queen would know of her success soon. Maybe then she would allow the queen the other types long denied to her hive, and provide her with both plans and resources that they might be grown. Or perhaps it was time she created one herself. With the resources and bodies she would be given once her work had been deemed a success, the queen would be able to improve her hive 1,000-fold.
And maybe then...
The queen sighed, relaxing back onto the soft bed that had been made to hold her vast weight. Until that day, she must continue to labor. More than once, the queen had thought of trying to create yet another Prognigator, or even another queen, but that had been outlawed both by the great queen and the pact made with Lyskor. And yet, she was in sore need of another assistant. Perhaps one of the individuals might serve. It was part of the reason they were necessary, after all. Pon had levels in tactician, perhaps not as high as the queen's, but then again, perhaps so. The new Antinium leveled up far quicker than Kilbkch or the queen, and she needed help. She left the above world to Kissimber and Kilbkch despite her misgivings, so she could better lead her hive below. The above world was not the queen's concern at the moment. She could not turn her attention to lesser matters, for if she were distracted by the concerns of the surface, who would lead her army against the threat from below? The Antinium had long known of the dungeon underneath Lyskor. The ruins had been only a small part. In their tunneling, the Antinium had uncovered nearly all of the vast ruins. But entering them? Another matter entirely. It was all they could do some days to hold the line. The queen settled back against one stone wall and reached out to the rest of her hive, assessing, commanding. Today's casualty report? 52 workers and 86 soldiers slain, 5 tunnels breached, fortifications in 242, negative 42, negative 4951 were in desperate need of repairs. She thought as she went over the workers slowly clearing bodies and hauling the rest to be turned into the easily storable and highly nutritious paste she loathed so much. The surface was inconvenient, but also necessary. Gold rank adventurers would soon be entering the city. Was it time to reveal the extent of the ruins? That process was underway, but could be sped up or halted with the Antinium's help, or lack thereof. Soon, the queen sat and pondered her hive and the dungeon beneath. It mattered little if it was Antinium or other species who fought their way to the center of the dungeon, but the Antinium must have the artifacts that lurked inside the true treasure rooms. It must be retrieved, but if the guardians were to be freed in the process, Skinner was the least of their worries. The Antinium had killed 19 fleshworms in the tunnels so far, even if none of them had built up so much flesh as he had, or the gems of terror. No, the real threat was deeper, darker. The queen sat on her throne and turned her attention back to her long war in the depths. They had sworn to protect Lascaur, that they might grow. The Antinium would do so, and then they would reap their harvest, and the world would change with them. Saria Springwalker hated the image everyone had of half-elves. Everyone, mostly humans, but all species, really, had this image of half-elves as these eternally happy beings who love to frolic in flowers and hug trees. Saria didn't like flowers, and the only time she hugged trees were to climb up them to escape from bears. She was a city girl, not some crazed nature freak. Even so, she had to admit there was a grain of truth to the myths. She had an affinity with plants that few other species did. So it made sense Aaron would ask her for help planting flowers. It just wasn't fun for Saria.
Here, space them out a bit more so they can absorb more nutrition.
Saria directed Aaron as the two young women labored over the pots on the table. They were filled with soil, and Saria had already made sure they had a good spot in the sun. More than that, she didn't really know. She might be good with flowers, but she had no idea what to do with these ones. The flowers that had caused Aaron to think she was a tiny person for the better part of an hour were golden and soft to the touch. They were also a trick. Saria had been expecting gold, but she fully realized that had been stupid of her, and of Aaron, but the half-elf didn't want to make the human feel worse than she was already. Not that Aaron looked too upset. The girl was actually humming as she chattered to Saria about the possible uses of the odd flowers. She was calling them Alice flowers, for a reason Saria couldn't understand, but Saria did agree the flowers were probably as valuable as gold. They were magical. And not. Saria could sense the same odd feeling from these flowers that she got from the frost fairies. It was a tingling in the back of her mind, a stirring in her soul. Were they valuable or not? Certainly an alchemist might pay a lot for them if they weren't common somewhere else, but Saria just didn't know. It still seemed a bit pitiful, given that it was payment for all of Aaron's hard work. And yet, Aaron had leveled up 4 times from that one night. Saria couldn't believe it, and her skills, Wondrous Fair and Inn's Aura. Saria knew that some chefs earned magical cooking, but she'd never heard of Aaron's skill. That settled it. Aaron Solstice was no ordinary human, any more than Ryoka was. Saria glanced over at the other girl. Ryoka was as tight-mouthed as a clam, and twice as tough to crack open, but Aaron was far more easygoing and open. She was smiling as she gently patted the flowers into the soil.
Aaron, you, don't seem like you're too normal.
The girl paused and frowned at Saria.
Thanks? Or wait, is that an insult?
Saria laughed and stood up from her pot, dusting off her hands.
Hardly. You're unlike any human I've ever met, and I've met a few. You and Ryoka are completely unique, though. Where do the two of you hail from?
The half-elf moved to sit at a table as Erin frowned at her pot. The girl replied absently.
Oh, I come from another world. Ryoka does, too.
Saria kept walking and then tripped over the chair she'd been going to sit on. She crashed to the ground face first, breaking her fall with both hands.
Saria!
Erin dropped the flower she was holding, but Saria was on her feet in an instant. The half-elf gaped at Erin.
You what? Wait, you and Ryoka?
The girl looked panicked.
Didn't I say? I thought I told you. Wait, I told Grishaya and Kilbkich, but... Oh, I thought Ryoka told you!
She clapped a hand to her head.
Oh, no! Ryoka's gonna be so mad at me!
Saria sat in a chair and let her head spin for a while. Erin hovered around her anxiously.
I mean, it isn't that big a deal, right? There's no way back, not that I know of, and Ryoka and I don't know anything special. Technology is really different where I come from, but I can't build anything like Ryoka's iPhone.
I can't believe it. Oh, I just...
The half-elf broke off, shaking her head. The trouble was, she could believe it. It would be far easier to call Erin crazy, but it made sense, especially with everything Saria had observed about Ryoka. No wonder the other girl was so cagey. And here was Erin, as oblivious of the dangers as an owl on a summer's day. Saria sighed. Someone had to protect the girl. It should probably be her.
I guess we've got more to talk about.
I guess, but we've got a lot to talk about anyways, right? Like these flowers and those new skills I've got.
The skills, right.
At this point, the skills were one of the last things on Saria's mind, but the half-elf reluctantly focused on Erin.
Obviously. The Wondrous Fair skill has to do with you making food for the fairies. I'm not sure about N's aura, but it might just make your inn more attractive or something.
Oh, that could be helpful. But what about Wondrous Fair? Does that mean I can make food only for fairies? Or that it's somehow, magical?
Why don't you try to make something and we'll see what the skill does?
Right!
Erin nodded a few times and disappeared into the kitchen. Saria sighed, and Erin poked her head back out.
Wait one second. I'll make you some crepes, and then we can talk, okay? Magical crepes!
Saria nodded weakly. She had no idea what a crepe was, but she prayed it would take Erin some time. Her head still hurt. And then the door opened, and Saria's headache doubled. Pisces walked in. She knew it was him because she couldn't see anything, yet she heard the footsteps.
Pisces, don't tell me you've gotten in trouble with the watch again.
Hardly. I'm just here to avoid unwanted attention.
Pisces reappeared in an instant, and Saria sighed. This was not a good time for him to show up, which was why she should have expected him. Somehow, he could always pop up at the worst possible moment. She was only glad he hadn't heard Erin's accidental admission. Saria would be the first to admit Pisces wasn't evil so much as annoying, but he had a habit of causing trouble. If he learned about where Erin was from...
What interesting flowers. Are they magical?
Trust Pisces to focus on the magic in the room first. Saria sighed.
Take your hands away from those. If you steal one, Erin'll hurt you. They're a gift from the winter sprites.
Pisces immediately snatched his hand away and backed up.
Ugh, those things. I thought even Miss Erin would know to leave them well alone.
Well, she didn't, and they paid her in flowers.
Oh, well, perhaps I will just have something to eat. Is that food I smell?
Saria closed her eyes as Pisces strode into the kitchen. She heard a shout, and the mage hurried back out.
Go away! I'm cooking! And Saria, these crepes don't feel magical.
Perhaps I should try one to be sure.
Pisces ducked as a ladle flew out of the kitchen. He sniffed loudly.
Oh, that was dangerous. I am a customer.
Not paying?
Oh, must you hold that against me? Well, soon enough, I will have sufficient funds to pay for my meals. I have enrolled in the Adventurers' Guild.
That made Saria sit up in her seat. Pisces? An adventurer? It was almost as much of a surprise as Aaron's admission. She eyed him. He must have been very hungry to be so desperate.
You can't be serious. You'll die on your first mission,
he sneered at her.
If you can do it, Springwalker, I see no reason why I can't do the same. Of course, with my undead, I will be able to accomplish much even by myself. Unless you'd care to join my party.
Fat chance! And stop stealing food, or Erin will hurt you. And if she doesn't, I will!
Pisces was pointing a finger into the kitchen, and Saria knew he was using a minor levitation spell. He scowled, and Erin yelped as the crepe he'd been levitating dropped back down.
Pisces!
He raised his hands as the girl stormed out.
Oh, should I mention this? There appears to be a girl freezing to death in the snow a few miles north of here. I thought you might be interested.
What?
Erin stared at him as Pisces explained. Saria narrowed her eyes at her acquaintance. Friend was far too strong a word.
How do you know that? And why are you telling Erin? I'd have thought you'd want the girl to die.
I would, but Celis insisted I tell Erin. She believes Erin will rescue the girl.
Well, of course. She's out there with no coat. How could they do that?
Erin stared at Pisces and then rushed into the kitchen. Saria heard scraping, and then Erin stormed out of the kitchen with a plate of crepes in hand. She shoved it on the table and turned to Saria.
I've got to go. I'll be back in a little bit, Saria.
What? Erin, listen. That girl is a thief. She was exiled from the Scar for a reason. You can't just...
Erin stared at Saria. There was something disconcerting about the young woman's gaze. She was normally so amiable, but now her stare was serious and unwavering.
No one deserves to die in the cold. No one.
She turned.
Torin! Where is he? Never mind.
She ran back into the kitchen and reemerged with a coat. Then Erin dashed out the door. Pisces watched her go and shook his head.
Too kind by far, that girl. For a child from another world, she is rather careless.
Saria stared at Pisces. He smirked at her and then frowned when he realized she wasn't taken aback.
Ah, you know.
How do you know?
A certain conversation on that device of Ryoka Griffin's. It was troublesome to copy the message spell as I recreated it, but...
Pisces shrugged. Saria remembered him bragging about that bit of magic as they'd exited the ruins. She narrowed her eyes.
And now, you've just sent that girl off to rescue a dangerous thief?
Not dangerous, so much as annoying at this point, I believe. Her magical items are gone.
Saria stood up, sighing. She walked over to Pisces and smacked him with her skeletal hand. He yelped as she glared at him.
Idiot! Come with me. Once we go and make sure Erin doesn't get mobbed by those damn gnolls and drakes, we'll talk about you being an adventurer as much as anything else. I'm re-farming the horns of Hammerot.
Both his eyebrows shot up. He looked at her skeletal hand and then blinked twice when he realized it had been the one to strike him.
Well, that is a new development. But you have no wand, and unlike me, you don't have any skills in that area.
Saria smiled grimly and raised her skeletal hand.
Oh, I can do magic. And Yvlon is... well, she's got scars, but she's still got both arms. And so do I.
She concentrated, and an ice spike formed in the air, hovering above her skeletal hand, ready to launch. Pisces's mouth fell open slightly, and then he regained his composure. He smiled at Saria, for once genuine, reminding her of the young man she'd studied with back in Wistrum.
Aha! How intriguing.
Someone knocked on a door. Someone else opened it. It was an ordinary scene, except that it was Val knocking on Magnolia's door, and it was a maid who came to open the expensive double doors and lead him inside the vast mansion that was her home within the city of adventurers, Inversil. But Val was used to the routine, and so he charmed the maid as she put him in a large waiting room and went to summon the lady of the manor. Magnolia was unique in that way. Normally, a senior maid or butler would handle Val, but he knew Lady Magnolia talked to all runners, not just couriers when accepting their deliveries. And this one was special. Val had been puzzling over it the entire way north, and he was wondering what Lady Magnolia would make of it. He didn't have long to wonder. Lady Magnolia, the deadly flower blooming in the north and scion of the Reinhardt house, swept into the room, charming Val before he could charm her.
My word! Is it all safe? I haven't seen you in... why, it must be 2 months at least. Please, sit, sit.
Val did so, watching as Magnolia sat herself in the rich little room, and her maids joined her. Well, only one maid today. Ressa, the head maid, inclined her head at Val, and he nodded back respectfully. It had taken a lot of work to get on the prickly maid's good side, but then he'd tried to conduct himself as respectfully as possible in Lady Magnolia's house. For good reason. No one made an enemy of the Reinhardts and didn't pay for it in some way. For one thing, Magnolia was a far better friend than enemy, and Val liked her. So he smiled as he reached for his belt and brought out a folded letter and proffered it to her.
I have a delivery for you, as you might imagine, Lady Magnolia.
Really? A delivery? I hadn't expected one, at least not from you.
Well, it's a favor for a friend. I'm told you know Ryoka Griffin. This letter is from her to you.
The name didn't even make Lady Magnolia blink. But Ressa's reaction was more dramatic. The normally unflappable maid stirred slightly, and then Magnolia smiled.
Now, that is interesting. Pray, when did you last see Ryoka?
Val shouldn't have been surprised Magnolia knew Ryoka. He knew the local runners' guilds loved to fulfill her requests, and each runner took turns doing the lucrative deliveries. But he was surprised at Ressa's reaction. He smiled back, trying to be as open and honest as possible.
A day ago, she was in an inn just outside of Lascaux. She left in a big hurry, but she gave me this before she went.
He offered her the letter, and Magnolia took it. Her eyes sparked with interest as she took the letter from him. It was a simple thing. Yet Magnolia scrutinized it, and Val felt she took something away even from that.
A letter from Ryoka Griffin? Well, well. Now, what could it be? Ah, it's unsealed.
Lady Magnolia took out a small piece of parchment and unfolded it. She looked at it, blinked, and then laughed. Ressa stood stock still behind her lady. But Val knew that she had read the parchment as well. Her face was stony, but Magnolia was laughing in delight. Val had to smile, too. He knew what the little bit of parchment said by heart now.
We should talk soon. R.
That was it. No secret ink, no hidden message. Magnolia's laughing turned to chuckles before she regained her decorum. She tapped the parchment gently with one fingernail.
You've read these, I take it?
Val ducked his head apologetically.
It was my price for delivering it. I do apologize, but...
Oh, nonsense! How clever of Miss Ryoko. A courier must have his payment, mustn't he? But I fear she hasn't given you much to work off of.
Well, your reaction is quite interesting.
Isn't it?
Lady Magnolia twinkled merrily at Val, and he wondered how much this information was worth. The game of politics featured her as no small player, and any good courier knew to sell the latest tidbit as soon as possible before it grew stale. Then again, secrets should be kept unless you wanted a dagger in your throat, and he had no desire to harm Ryoka. But she'd known what would happen when she gave him the letter, because he'd asked, and so he was doubly interested in what Lady Magnolia would do next.
Well, what should my response be? I suppose I could hire you. Although Ryoka has gone further south, hasn't she?
No one knew how Magnolia learned her secrets, so Val didn't even blink at her knowledge.
Yes, she has, but I'm afraid tracking her down would be something of a chore, even for a courier. I could recommend you a good one who knows the area, though.
Oh, perish the thought. It's a needless expense. No, Ryoka will come north sooner rather than later, but I'm afraid she might be disappointed, because my answer is sadly... nothing.
Lady Magnolia handed the letter to Ressa, and the maid made it disappear into her skirt. Val blinked.
Nothing? Well, Ryoka did say you might have an unusual reaction.
I believe I would have, a week ago, but she was a bit too slow for once. Shall I show you what I mean? It may be interesting if you meet her again.
I would be delighted. But I fear it is unlikely I'd meet Ryoka again.
Nevertheless, I would be delighted to show you, if only to indulge myself, and I find it never pays to be certain of anything in this world. If you would be so good as to join me.
Lady Magnolia stood up and ushered Val towards the door. She led him through her mansion, filled with bowing servants and priceless artifacts, to a large room. There, she paused and opened the door ever so slightly. Val, realizing he should be quiet, leaned forwards. He found himself staring into a room expensively decorated, as with every place in the mansion, but in this case filled with sofas and fancy things to sit on. He thought one of the couches was called a chaise longue, but Val had seldom been this far inside a noble's home. But of course, that wasn't the main feature of the room. The people were, congregated around a resplendent table filled with every sort of drink and food were several people. They weren't more than children, really. Oh, some were young adults, but they held themselves without the confidence Val and Magnolia had. They looked ordinary. Their faces were like any Val had seen on his travels, and they acted like normal people. But their clothes, they were brightly colored and embossed with artwork Val had never seen before in his life. And then his heart skipped a beat as he saw one of them held a strange object in his hands. It was flat and looked vaguely like a mirror, but instead of reflecting things, it shone with a bright, unnatural light that had to be some kind of magic, and it was emitting sound, and some of the others were clustered around it. And what was that another one had? Some kind of... One turned his head, and Val moved his head away from the door, although he was probably far enough away that no one had noticed the small crack in the door in any case. Magnolia stealthily shut the door and turned to Val.
Well, your thoughts, brave courier?
Her eyes were dancing. Val had to smile back. Lady Magnolia played games with fates and lives. It was true. That was what anyone with power did in the North, and their subtle wars could ruin lives. But Magnolia did her scheming in the open as much as in the shadows, with laughter and a willingness to share her fortune with others. He couldn't help but like her for it.
I believe I've seen something like the device held in that boy's hands.
Yes, fascinating, isn't it? I regret to say that it puts Ryuka's plans in a bit of a bind, however.
That is tricky. She's a good runner, you know.
Magnolia led Val back to the room, where a tea set and snacks had already been set out by Ressa. She smiled at him.
I would like to explain more, but I fear that would place you in jeopardy. Feel free to mention all the details to anyone who pays you well, though.
He ducked his head, blushing slightly.
If you wish me to omit anything...
Nonsense! You must have your payment, and I would be remiss if I let those busybodies up north miss a chance to gossip, worry, and scheme.
Lady Magnolia laughed lightly again, and Val had to laugh with her. He leaned forwards and asked the question that was on his mind.
So what does this mean, Lady Magnolia? Is it good for you, or bad for Ryoka? You said this was an interesting week.
She beamed at him.
Let us simply say that it has been a red-letter day for all of us, although the letter you've given me is not red. Oh, dear. I suppose the analogy works in any case, though. Now, will you take tea or something stronger before you tell me of what has happened with dear Ryoka?
Later that evening, in Liscor, two teams of gold rank adventurers entered the city to the excitement of no one but Celis, who was at the desk in the Adventurers Guild at the time. A named adventurer began her slow journey as she sailed across the seas from Tyrandria. And Erin hired her first employee. That turned out to be a mistake.